that he would much rather be here as well, but we will do our best to fill in at the very least. If it doesn't go well, you'll just appreciate your pastor all the more. So either way, I think it's going to be a win-win situation. We pick up our reading in 2 Samuel chapter 21. And I know we all know the life of David, and we know the ups and downs of Israel's going to and from, away from God. And 2 Samuel 21 takes place after, of course, David's sin with Bathsheba, and from that, David's son Absalom rises up against him and tries to dethrone King David, and many battles ensue from that point. Absalom, of course, was chasing David. Absalom had his men, and there were many trials in David's life, many burdens on his heart, many just sleepless nights going to and from. And at one point, when the battle came with Absalom, his men told David to sit this one out. We know David was a great man of war, a great man of battle, but his men told him he needed to sit this one out because if in fact David's faithful, they lose the battle, that Absalom wouldn't care about them, but of course he would pursue David at all costs. So they told David, a great warrior, to sit out the battle. In 2 Samuel chapter 21, we'll start reading in verse number 15, another time of great trials and great battles in Israel's time. And we're going to read through the end of the chapter, and there's a common theme before I tell you to see if you can pick it up for yourselves. But in verse 15 it says, "Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel. And David went down and his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines. And David waxed faint." And I'm going to butcher all these names, I apologize. But he says, "In Ishbianab, which was the sons of a giant, the weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he being girded with a new sword thought to have slain David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, secured him and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David sware unto him, saying, Thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. And it came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sichabachi, the Hushonite, slew Saph, which was of the sons of the giant. And there was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of Jerojim, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was yet a battle in Gath, where was a man of great stature, that had on every hand 6 fingers, and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number. And he also was born to the giant. And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, the brother of David, slew him. These 4 were born to the giant in Gath, and fell by the hand of David, and by the hand of his servant." In these verses, we see a numerous number of battles, or 4 to be exact, 4 battles against the Philistines. The common theme we see within these verses is there was yet another battle. It starts in 15 with a battle. It says, "Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel." In verse 18, it says, "There was again a battle." In verse 19, "And there was again a battle." And in verse 20, "And there was yet a battle in Gath." We've entitled our thought for this morning, "And Yet Another Battle." We see in these verses that there was always another battle to fight for King David and his men. The Israelites didn't have rest from the Philistines. They were constantly going from one battle to another. The thought we want to try to get across this morning, and I know it's going to sound a little negative, a little depressing, a little discouraging, but just bear with me. Hopefully we can wrap it all up, and it won't be such a discouragement to you this morning, and hopefully it'll be an encouragement when we're done. But we see that there'll always be another battle. It doesn't matter if we're defeated. We all go through many defeats in our lives. We could think about the children of Israel going to fight Ai, how they thought they were going to conquer them easily, and of course they lost the battle, and they ran home discouraged, defeated. We could think of spiritual battles in the lives of some very godly men. Of course, we know Peter. He lost a very spiritual battle when he denied Christ three times. We could think in our lives how many spiritual battles we've lost. How many defeats we've suffered by the hands of Satan or of the world. We've all been there. We've all have our defeats. But after each one of those defeats, there's always another battle. When Israel ran home from Ai defeated, it wasn't too long until they had another battle to fight. Peter, after he denied Christ, went away weeping bitterly. It wasn't too much longer. There was another battle in Peter's life. He had to go and preach the gospel where he wasn't welcome. In our lives, no matter when we're defeated, there's always another battle. We think of all the victories we've had. And we've all had some victories if you're saved by the Lord Jesus Christ. There's victories in them. We can think of great victories in the lives of Israel. They defeated so many enemies. They had so many mountaintop experiences. They were at the top of the world, the best of the best. But each time there was another battle ready for them to fight. You look in verse 17 of our text. The first battle going on here, and we see David waxing faint. David about to be defeated. One of these sons of the giant was getting ready to kill David. But verse 17 says, "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, secured him and smote the Philistine and killed him." And then the men of David told him, once again, "You're not going to battle anymore." But we see Abishai had a great victory for the nation of Israel. His king was getting ready to die. This giant was standing over him, getting ready to slay him with the sword. But Abishai was there and slew the giant. I can only imagine the victory cries, the dancing, the singing, the sounds of excitement going on within the nation of Israel that they slew this giant. The battle was over. But we know in the next verse it says there was another battle with the Philistines. After our victories, there's always another battle. We see in our text verses that these battles that we're going to fight are all on various battlefields. They didn't take place at the same time, the same place. We see a couple battles fought at Gob, one at Gath. And I can't remember the fourth one is off the top of my head, but they were in different places. You look over the nation of Israel, they didn't really fight in the same area all the time. They fought in different lands. Sometimes we go into the battle. We travel to the battle. Sometimes we knowingly go into battle. There are things that we must fight in our lives. We can think about, you can get political if you want. You can get just battles at work, battles in the home, battles in our cities, or wherever it may be. There's battles we know we have to fight. Whether it's laws that are unjust, whether it's the murder of unborn babies or protecting marriage or whatever it may be, there are some battles we know that we're going to fight. And we knowingly prepare ourselves. We walk willingly to the battlefield. We know what's going to happen. There's other times that we go to the battle not knowing that we're heading to a battle. We go about our lives and then we're surprised when a fight takes place. And sometimes the battle comes to us. Sometimes the Philistines come to our land, as it was in verse 15. It says, "Moreover, the Philistines had get war again with Israel." The Philistines came and knocked on Israel's door. The battle came to Israel, and they were ready to fight. Sometimes in our lives, the battle just comes to us, and we need to stand our ground. We see in these verses in our text here that the battle just keeps on coming. The first point we want to make this morning is the tenacity of the battle, or the perseverance of the battle, the pressures of the battle. The battle doesn't quit. The enemies are going to keep coming. The Israelites in these verses had to face four giants, one right after another. And I don't know about you, but I don't think any of us would want to fight a giant. But Israel had to fight one giant after another. Of course, David, as a child, as a boy, killed Goliath, who was thought to be the biggest, meanest, scariest giant of them all. But Goliath had four brothers. There's speculation when David was at the brook and he picked up those five smooth stones to go, he was ready not only to kill Goliath, but the four brothers as well. I think, if I'm correct, I could be wrong, that these four giants slain here are the other four David was preparing to fight. But these four other giants, one right after another, they just kept coming. Abishai slew the first one, but the next day there was one more. These giants all had something in common other than their physical appearance, their great stature, their great weaponry, their great armor, their great training. In verse 17, we see the minds of these giants. What these giants wanted to do, our verse 16, rather, in the end of it, he says, he being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David. These giants had one thing on their mind, to slay David. The nation of Israel was secondary to the capture and the killing of David. They needed to kill the king. As Abishai puts at the end of verse 17, it says, thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. Abishai calls David the light of Israel. Of course, we know that God was their leader. God was their true light. But David, being a good king by many accounts, and a good warrior, a good servant of God, was the heart and soul of Israel's army. He was the one that they wanted to protect. These were the ones the enemies wanted to kill. They had one mission. Another thing in common, as we already said, they had powerful weapons. In verse 16, we're told that he had a spear whose weighed 300 shekels of brass and girded with a new sword. In verse number 20, or verse 19 rather, it said whose spear was like a weaver's beam. These giants had great and powerful weapons. They had weapons that David couldn't wield as strong as he was, that David's men, even the mighty men of Israel, could not wield these weapons. They were too big, too heavy for them. Just like in our lives, we're told many times throughout the scriptures that our enemy has powerful weapons. And we'll get to those in just a few moments, but there are so many weapons coming up against God's people, against God's children, against God's churches. And then we see that these giants, in the heat of the battle, the tenacity of the battle, they just keep coming, and they come at us differently every time. In verse 20, we're told these giants had six fingers and six toes on every hand and every foot. They were weird. They were strange. They were different. They didn't look like a normal person. Again, I use those terms loosely, but they didn't look the same as everybody else. These giants, not only were they much bigger and stronger, they had some oddities about them. The battles in our lives that come across from us are always going to be different. They're never going to be the same. There's going to be some weird things that Christians face. Once we think we figure out the enemy, we know that he's just going to change and come at us a different way. These giants are different. We see the tenacity of this battle, how heated it is and how ongoing it is. It's a daily thing. We're told that we need to take up our cross daily and follow Christ. There's a battle for each one of us each and every morning. Each and every night, a new battle arises. Paul said that he was talking about battling with the flesh, saying that he was doing things that he didn't want to do. And the things he wanted to do, he wasn't doing because of his flesh. That battle for Paul was an ongoing thing. He didn't just wake up one morning and conquer the flesh. He said each and every day he had to beat it under subjection. He had to take control of the flesh. Our battles are each and every day. They're going to keep coming. The second thing we want to notice, other than the tenacity of the battle, we want to notice the toll of the battle. Battle takes a toll on his participants. You think about soldiers coming back from war and they're tired. They're wore out. It takes a toll on their bodies, on their minds, on their being, and it just wears them out. David, in verse 15, it says, and David waxed faint. David grew weary from the battle. He was tired. He was getting ready to be defeated. That's when he, as great of a warrior David was, this giant wore him down. This giant got him to the point where David was falling over, couldn't stand. And of course, Abishai was there to help him. But David waxed faint. David grew weary, a man of battle. A man from his youth, when he was in his father's fields fighting off bears and lions, fighting Goliath as a youth, and then taking over the armies and fighting battle after battle. He's finally growing weary, growing tired. The battles we face, the spiritual battles, the spiritual warfare that we're in, are going to take a toll upon our hearts. They're going to take a toll upon our bodies. They're going to take a toll on our minds. We're going to wax faint eventually. We look in back up to verse number 1 of chapter 21. We know the battles are important. And when we're in a battle, we try our best to fight it. We try our best to stand strong, to be bold for the Lord. We try our best to fight for our lives. We use all of our energy to do what we can. But the days leading up to these battles are just as important. The days leading up to the battles are what prepare us, or the lack of preparation going up to the battles are what causes defeat. But we see a few things in David's life. Again, we've already talked about the sin with Bathsheba and how that destroyed his life. We talked about his son rising up, Absalom chasing him, and then the fact that Absalom was killed. David was still sorrowful for that, the loss of a child. But we see some more things weighing heavy on David's just moments, just days before these four battles took place. In verse number 1, it says, "And then there was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year." There was famine in the land. David was going to fight these giants, one right after another. They were going to fight the great armies of the Philistines, and their land was dealing with a famine. Their armies were not fed as much as they are used to being fed. And I'm sure David, being king, he had more than most people. But David's heart, I would tend to believe that he made a lot of sacrifices as well. David didn't have all the nourishment, all the things he was used to having. His army wasn't in tip-top shape going up to these battles of the giants. There was famine in the land. We know in order to be at our strongest, we need to eat. We need nourishment. We need to strengthen our bodies. We need to take care of it. We need to fuel it, if you will. Without that food and nourishment, our bodies grow weak. This is where David was right before these battles. And the second part of that verse is, "As David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, it is for Saul and for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites." We see David was waxing faint, not only because of the famine, but because of failure and disobedience of Saul. Now we see it wasn't David's disobedience, David's failures in his life that caused this famine, but that of Saul's. We won't turn there, but in Joshua chapter 9, when the Israelites are going through and conquering the lands and things of that nature, Joshua makes a covenant with the Gibeonites, a promise of peace that they weren't going to destroy them and things of that nature, a promise, a covenant that was supposed to be kept. But we're told here, Saul broke it. Saul slew the Gibeonites. And for that breaking of covenant, Israel was cursed with a great famine in their lands. It wasn't David's fault. It wasn't David's own sin bringing it on. It was the sins of his predecessors, the last regime. But it still weighed heavy in David's life. David still had to bear those burdens and that toll from the previous kings. And I was thinking about in my life, and excuse me, just looking back the lives of fellow Christians and church members, the stories that I've heard, and how many times have we seen a great hero of our faith fall or falter? A great man of God that has stood in the pulpits of the Lord's churches, and then all of a sudden, he quits. Or all of a sudden, he goes the other direction. Or we think of great women who have taught Sunday school or have been great role models, and they've done the same. They've quit. or they've gone off to false teachings. That takes a toll on Christians. I think back about the men that I know of, the men that I looked up to as a youth, and many of which are still standing, and I'm thankful for that, but there are a few that just aren't around anymore. Or they're preaching something completely different than what they stood for years ago. That's a burden. That's a toll. And we would like to say it doesn't affect us, but it does. We think about it, we get discouraged. So David's dealing with all this. He's dealing with famine. He's dealing with the failures of King Saul. And of course, Saul wanted to kill David, but David had the utmost respect for Saul. David looked up to Saul. He looked up to the best moments of Saul. Saul was not a very good king in many aspects, but he had a few good qualities. And of course, he was a man of God. Someone that took David in, that kind of mentored David until David's popularity grew. But David had all this on his mind. And then in verse 14, or the next few verses, and then going up to verse 14, we see a series of events where the Gibeonites sought revenge. They sought justice for Saul's slaying of the Gibeonites. And they said to David they wanted 7 of Saul's sons so they can hang and kill. David, and I'm sure this weighed heavy on his heart as well, he gave the Gibeonites what they wanted. He gave the Gibeonites 7 sons of Saul, and they hung them in the streets. And back up to verse 12, he says, "And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh-Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hanged them, when the Philistines had slain Saul in Gilboa. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged, the 7 men that the Gibeonites hung. And the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his sons, buried they in the country of Benjamin and Zelah, in the sepulchre of Kiash, his father. And they performed all that the king commanded. And after that, God was entreated for the land." So we see a series of funerals taking place right before these battles. Now again, Saul was David's enemy. Saul's family was David's enemy, but just by association. David delivered them up to the Gibeonites to slay. But I don't think David was happy about it. I don't think David was happy about Saul being slain in battle. I don't think David was happy about Saul's and his son's body being mutilated as their heads chopped off. I don't believe David was happy with the fact that he had to turn over 7 sons of Saul to the Gibeonites. But he gathered them all together, the bones and the bodies that they had, and they gave them a proper burial. And if you know from our experiences, funerals take a toll on us, don't they? We go to funerals, and usually you aren't too happy afterwards. We can rejoice in the fact that they're saved, that they're in a better place, that they're with the Lord. But it still saddens our hearts. David's going through all this, the famine, the failures of Saul, the funerals he had to go through. And then all of a sudden, he's got to go fight these 4 giants. We've already talked about the goal of our enemy was to slay David. And our worst enemy, Satan, has but one goal. And many people, they picture the devil, and if you've seen it on TV or commercials or movies or people talking about it, they think about this great battle between Satan and God. That Satan keeps trying to attack God and God fires back and it goes back and forth. That's completely false. Satan's battle isn't with God. Satan's not attacking the Lord. These giants weren't attacking Israel. They were attacking David pretty much. But Satan's not fighting God. He can't. He knows he lost. We're told that they know the scriptures, that Satan knows the end. He knows he already lost that fight. He cannot fight against God because there's no point. But what his goal is to fight God's people. His goal is to fight those that are saved. His goal is to attack you if you're saved by the grace of God. That's his goal. It's not to fight against God. It's to destroy you. He can't destroy God. He can't take your salvation. But he can destroy our lives. He can destroy our testimonies. He can destroy our future effect on other people. He can destroy the effectiveness our lives have to the ministry of Christ. And that's what he's trying to attack. All the fiery arrows, all that great weaponry that Satan has, it's not pointed up towards heaven. It's pointed right here at earth, to each one of us. And that's why the Lord gives us that great armor of God that he gives. But Satan seeks to destroy us. That roaring lion that goeth about seeking who may devour, it's not to devour God, it's to devour Christians. Battles take a great toll on our lives. Look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Keep your fingers here, we'll turn back here in a moment. But 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Second Corinthians chapter 4 and verse number 16. I think we can start there. Well, let's back up to verse 14. It says, knowing that he which raised up the Lord Jesus shall raise up also by Jesus and shall present us with you. For all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace might through the thanksgiving of many redound to the glory of God. For which cause we faint not, But though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and external weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, and the things which are not seen are eternal. But in verse 16 again, it says, for which cause we faint not. But though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. The tolls of battle are going to take effect on our lives. And we're told here our bodies are going to perish. They're going to deteriorate. As we get older, as we get worn down, as we take on more stress and more cares of this world, we just deteriorate. It's just how life is. But he says our inward man is renewed day by day. The battles we fight spiritually will take a toll on our inner man, on our spiritual man, but that's why the Lord says it's renewed each and every day. We need to make sure we're preparing our bodies, preparing our spiritual side each and every day to fight these battles. It's an ongoing thing, as we've already looked at. It's an everyday battle we need to fight. Hebrews 12:3 says, for consider him, of course, verse 2 talks about looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, but verse 3 says, for consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. The Lord knows that these battles are going to take a toll upon us, that they're going to cause us to be tired and faint, as David did. And that's why he says, consider Christ. Consider Christ, lest we be wearied and faint in our minds. If we're focused on the battle, if we're focused on our own abilities within the battle, if we're focused on another great warrior who we look up to and their ability to fight the battles, we're going to wax faint. We're going to be wearied. We're going to tire. We're going to give up. We're going to not have the strength to fight anymore. But we need to look to Christ. Look back in 2 Samuel chapter 21. Now I know looking at the tenacity of the battle and the toll that it takes is not a very encouraging thing. That's kind of why we went through it quickly. It's discouraging to know that we're going to fight a battle each and every day. It's disheartening to know that even after a great victory, we can't sit up on the mountain very long. We're going to have to fight again. It saddens my heart to know that each and every day we wake up to fight another battle. Our bodies, our minds, our souls are going to be attacked, and we're going to grow tired. We're not going to be able to handle it. And of course, if we lean on Christ, we can, but we'll get to that in a moment as well. But it's not a very encouraging thought. I'm sure these Israelite armies, how mighty of a men they were, and how they would do anything for David and to protect David. I'm sure they woke up each and every day dreading the fact they had to fight another giant. I can almost imagine the cheers when Abishai slew the first one. The excitement that the battle was over, only the next day to have to go down and fight another giant. The last thing we want to look at and spend the rest of our time, notice the teammates in the battle. The other people that took place in this battle. Now, of course, the greatest teammate we have is the Lord. I don't want to take away from that in any shape or form. And we knew God was with Israel. But look at the other people mentioned along with David in these battles. David was the king, their leader, a great warrior. Abishai called him the light of Israel. But David wasn't the only one fighting. And in these battles, David didn't even do most of the fighting. After the first battle, Abishai said, "You're no more coming to battle with us. This was too close. You almost died. You're staying home." And then they fought three giants after that. But in verse 17, again we see Abishai slaying the first giant. It said Abishai secured him. And that word secure means to protect, aid, or to help. Abishai was there to help David, to protect him, to aid him, to be there to battle with him. And this goes to show us how important it is to surround ourselves with the right people. We need to make sure we have warriors on our side, people that are going to fight alongside of us, not to weigh us down. We first meet Abishai, and I think in chapter 26 of 1 Samuel, he was along with David when David was running in the caves and hiding from Saul. And he was the one that wanted to go and kill Saul. He was the one that said, Saul's right there sleeping. I can go over there and put a spear through his head, nail him to the ground, and walk away. Nobody would know. He told David, "I don't even have to strike twice. I'll do it on the first shot. And we'll be done with Saul." And of course, David said, "We can't lay a hand on God's anointed," and told him not to. But Abishai was right there all the time to help David, to protect him, to aid him in any battle. We need to make sure we're surrounding ourselves with guys like Abishai, who are going to help us, who's going to encourage us, who's going to protect us when we fall. Because I guarantee you, one time or another, we're all going to fall. We're going to falter. We're going to stumble. But notice in verse 18, the second giant. It says then, in the last part of that verse, then Sibekai, the Hushite, slew Saph, which was the son of the giant. Another man slew the second giant. Abishai didn't have to go and slay the second one. Abishai was probably willing, probably wanted the chance to fight another giant, but he didn't have to. Another man stepped up. In verse 19, Jerorijim slew the third giant. In verse number 20, Jonathan, the only name that I could pronounce, slew the fourth. And the interesting thing about that one, in verse 21, it says, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, the brother of David, slew him. Now, if that name, Shimei, doesn't sound familiar, it probably doesn't the way I'm pronouncing it, but doesn't look familiar to you, it says he was the brother of David. You go back a few chapters, can't think of which one it was, but when Absalom was chasing after David and the armies were fighting David and David was seeking to take refuge, and Shimei, David's brother, was out in the streets throwing rocks at David. He was throwing rocks, trying to stone David in the streets. And then his son is the one that protected David. His son was one that rose up to slay the fourth giant to rid the land of these giants and of the Philistines. Sometimes our teammates come in unlikely places, or from unlikely places. You know, Shimei hated his brother, wanted to see him dead, chose Absalom's side, wanted to rise up with Absalom to be king and take his spot. But his son fought with David, was a great warrior with David's people. Again, we need to surround ourselves with the right kind of people. That lesson that we're told when we were little kids to make sure we have the right kind of friends. That doesn't stop once we graduate from middle school or elementary school or high school or college. It's an ongoing thing. We need to make sure we have the right people around us. It's important for us to know that David had help. David didn't enter these battles alone. He didn't go thinking he was going to go there and fight all four giants, which I truly, in my heart, I think that shepherd boy was eager to get out of him again. I can only imagine him picking up four more stones. I can almost think that he might have kept those four stones in his pocket, carried them around his whole time, getting ready for one day slaying these giants. Of course, it's all speculation and thought, but David wanted to slay those five giants. But even David needed a little help. It's important for us to know that we're not alone. You know, sometimes we think we get into that Elijah headspace. And of course, Elijah, a great prophet of God, but when he was standing up against the 450 prophets of Baal, what he say? He says, I am standing here. Against these 450, I'm the only one. And then after that great victory, again, he had that great victory on top of Mount Carmel. He had the fire rain down from heaven. God burned up the offering. The prophets of Baal couldn't do it. What a great victory. They chased after those prophets. They killed the false prophets of Baal. What a great victory that was for Elijah. And then just a chapter or two later, what was he? He was running for his life and hiding in a cave. And he said, woe is me. I'm the only one left. And of course, God told him that there was a remnant there. But sometimes we get into that headspace that we think we're alone. We think that as individuals, we think that, you know, I'm the only one left. Especially as the days get darker and drearier, and you think about people that once stood for the truth and don't stand anymore, we get discouraged. And then we come to church and we see our church numbers falling. We see people leaving the church. We don't see people joining the church like they used to. And we get discouraged. And then we get to the mindset, well, our church is the only one standing. We're it. This is it. This is all we've got. Look over in Romans chapter 11. We get to that mindset. We get to the mindset of Elijah that we're just, and I'm not faulting Elijah for this, because I think we've all done it at one point or another. And Elijah was up against greater odds than I think we'd ever be up against. But we get discouraged. We get disappointed. In Romans chapter 11, we can start reading in verse number 1. We want to get to verses 4 and 5. But verse 1 says, I say then, hath God cast away his people? God forbid. For I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. And that is a great encouragement right there. Hath God cast away his people? God forbid. He will never cast away his people. He's always going to be there. We have that promise. He's never going to leave us or forsake us. But verse 2 says, God hath not cast away his people, which he foreknew. What ye not? What the scripture saith of Elias, how he maketh intercession to God against Israel, saying, Lord, they have killed thy prophets and digged down thine altars, and I am left alone, and they seek my life. This is Elijah saying, I'm all alone. I'm the only one, and now they're coming after me to kill me. But notice what God told him in verse 4. It says, but what saith the answer of God unto him? I have reserved to myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to the image of Baal. God reminded Elijah when he was in that cave, there's 7,000 others that have yet to bow the knee. There's 7,000 others that are hiding in caves, and you're not alone. They just need that one to speak up, and of course, then they all started coming out of the woodwork after that. But they wasn't alone. The Lord was encouraging Elijah, saying, oh, there's 7,000 more. You're not alone. Keep fighting. Keep standing. Keep going. Fight one more battle. And the next day, fight another. But we think, you know, well, that's good for Elijah. That's good to know that Elijah had help, but what about us? What about me? What about my church? Verse number 5 says, even so then, at this present time, also there is a remnant according to the election of grace. Paul's writing, it wasn't just Elijah that had help. It wasn't just Elijah that had teammates. It wasn't just Elijah that had other prophets to help him. It says, Paul's writing, even at this present time, there is a remnant. Now again, you think, well, that's great for that time period. But notice the last phrase, to the election of grace. as long as there are still saved people on this earth, and of course that's going to be the remain until the Lord comes back, but as long as there are saved people, those that are election of grace, there's going to be a remnant. We're never going to be alone. They may be further and farther between. We may seem like we're alone, but God's promised there'll always be that remnant. There'll always be someone there to help stand. We know that we need the support of God's people. You think about in our lives, the challenges we face, where would we be without our church family? Where would we be without God's people? But on the flip side of that, we need to make sure we're supporting God's people. And we want to be supported. We want to have our church and brothers and sisters in Christ to gather around us and lift us up, but we need to make sure we're supporting and lifting them up as well. Look over in 2 Samuel chapter 10. Second Samuel chapter 10, we'll just start reading in verse number 9. It says, when Joab saw that the front of the battle was against him before and behind, he chose of all the choice men of Israel and put them in array against the Syrians. So Joab, another great man of war, controlling the armies, and he saw that their enemies were in front of them and behind him. That would be a scary situation. Surrounded by your enemies. They couldn't go forward. They couldn't go backwards. And the most dangerous part of that is they had a fight on both sides. They couldn't have their whole army just facing forward and fighting. They had to have half of them facing the back, half of them facing the front. They had to fight two armies at the same time. What a disaster Joab was in. But notice what he says in verse 10. He says, and the rest of the people he delivered into the hand of Abishai, his brother. So you have Joab and Abishai, this man that slew the giant for David. So Joab says, I'm going to take these men, and we're going to fight against the Syrians over here. And he says, Abishai, I'm going to give you these men, and you're going to fight against the children of Ammon. So Joab is fighting the Syrians facing one way. Abishai's fighting the Ammons facing the other way. And then what he's saying in verse 11. And he said, if the Syrians be too strong for me, then thou shalt help me. You know, we all want help, don't we? I don't think any of us want to go into a battle where we're overmatched, we can't handle it, that we're going to get defeated without having help. So Joab was right. Joab was like, well, you know, I'm fighting these Syrians, and it's very possible they're going to overtake us. It's very possible that me and my men cannot fight these Syrians, so if we start losing, Abishai, I'm going to need you to come over here and help me out. But then he says, but if the children of Ammon be too strong for thee, then I will come and help thee. Joab said, don't worry. If the children of Ammon are too strong for you, then I'm going to bring some men and we're going to go to the back and we're going to fight with you. It's a two-sided thing. We need to make sure we're helping the brethren just as much as they're helping us. We think about Aaron and Hur holding the arms of Moses up so that they can win the battle. Of course, when Moses grew weary and his arms started falling, the Israelites lost the battle. But Aaron and Hur grabbed his arms and they started winning again. We think about our church. Again, we need the support of our church, don't we? You know, our churches should be like a close-knit family or even more so than that. Our church should be better to us than our actual families because we need our church. We need the help, support of one another, but we also need to support one another. We think about our sister churches. You know, one of the things I like about being asked to preach other places, and I like to preach. I feel humbled every time I'm asked, but the one thing that encourages me the most is to know that I'm not alone. To know that 12 Ryan Baptist Church is not alone. You know, and we've been to several churches in Michigan. It's nice to know that there's more churches within an hour, 2 hours away. But, you know, I've traveled, you know, 12, 13 hours away to preach, and there's still churches there that are standing. It makes me realize that we're not alone. That our churches, that we have sister churches that we can fellowship with, that we believe like us, that teach like us, that preach like us. You know, they have the same battles we face. Different areas have slightly different things going on, but for the most part, the battles are the same. We need to be like Joab and Abishai. You know, if your battle over here is getting too hard, we're going to go help you. And if our battle is getting too tough, we want you to come help us. That's how we should be. We think about the fellowship that we should have with our sister churches. You know, for a long time, I heard about these great fellowships, these great meetings of churches getting together. And for much of my youth, those were gone. I didn't see them. There was a few meetings here and there, conferences and revivals, but other than that, there was nothing. You know, in the recent years, I'm pleased to see some of those are coming back. We see youth conferences starting to get back up. Your pastor has been talking to our pastor about having monthly fellowships, getting together at least once a month, do something. That's what we need. We need the fellowships among the Lord's churches. Because, you know, I love 12 Ryan Baptist Church. I'm partial to it. I think it's the best church in this on this earth. But 12 Ryan Baptist Church can't do it alone. No home missionary Baptist Church can't do it alone. We need support of one another. Look over in Mark chapter 9. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for this part. Your pastor may be listening. This may be the last time that I get to preach. But Mark chapter 9, we're going to go against the Baptist way of thinking. You know, we think about us as Baptists, and don't get me wrong, I think we're right. But we get to the point where it's just, you know, us three and no more. If you're not us, if you're not in our inner circle, then we don't need you. We don't want you. And of course, I don't think that's true. But that's a mentality of a lot of people today. They think that just because we have most of the truth, and there's a lot more truth that we need, just we don't know it all. But we think just because we hold to some truths that we believe in the Word of God that others don't, we quickly dismiss other people. We dismiss other fellowships. We dismiss other workers. We dismiss other laborers in the field. Mark chapter 9, in verse 38, says, "And John answered him, saying, Master, we saw one casting out devils in thy name, and he followeth not us. And we forbade him because he followeth not us." John goes to the Lord and says, "Master, we saw this man going around casting out devils in your name, but he wasn't one of us. He wasn't one of your apostles. He wasn't one of your disciples. He wasn't one of the ones that we witnessed to. He wasn't one of us. So he said, we told him to stop. Don't worry, Lord, we did you a favor. We took care of it. We told him to stop. Don't do that anymore. You're not part of us. What does the Lord say in verse number 39? And Jesus said, "Forbid him not. For there is no man which shall do a miracle in my name that can lightly speak evil of me. For he that is not against us is on our part." Christ says, wait, don't tell them that. Just because they're not within our inner circle doesn't mean they're our enemy. They're still doing the work of the Lord. That man casting out demons and devils, yeah, he wasn't one of the inner circle. He wasn't the one with most of the truth. He wasn't the ones that were in direct contact with the Lord. But he was still doing the Lord's work. He was still casting out devils. He was still fighting the same fight. And the Lord said, if he's not against us, he's for us. Just because he's not one of us doesn't mean he's against us. He's not our enemy. I think we get lost in that mentality that if they're not one of us, they're the enemy. We fight these battles and we think that we're the only ones equipped to fight. And I think that's why we start getting discouraged. We get so small-minded thinking we're the only ones that can fight. There are many other Christians, many other people doing good work. Now, I want to say this with a caveat. I know it's important to know that we believe, and I know that it's important to know what the truth is and that we should hold to it, not to compromise for it. And there's certain scopes of fellowship we can't have with churches and fellowships that don't believe like we do. But just because they don't have the whole truth as we see it doesn't make them the enemy. There's more than we think standing for the Lord. And I'll even go on a limb. We need their help just the same. We fight so much among Christians, among brethren, among churches that we lose sight of the real enemy. We lose sight of the enemy that we're facing. We need help. Look over in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and we'll close here, a verse that I know that we all know, but it doesn't hurt to be reminded of. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse number 9 says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. We see another lesson that we teach children growing up, safety in numbers, right? Don't go places alone, and we see that in this world today, as dark as it gets, don't go anywhere alone. Always have someone with you. Be prepared. There's safety in numbers. That's what the Lord's saying. They're saying, you know, one Christian. And of course, if we're leaning on the Lord, he can do anything. But we're much easier to be broken if we're by ourselves. Once we start getting two, three people together, it's a lot harder. One church can easily fall if they're just, they think that's all that they have. But when you start, you know, having all the sister churches and the fellowship and the conversations with our brothers and sisters, it makes us that much stronger. That threefold cord is not quickly broken. There's always going to be yet another battle. The Israelites had to face one giant after another. And after they fought those four giants, I know there was victory cries once again. But you keep reading, it wasn't long before the nation of Israel had to fight again. And then fight again. And fight again. We think all the battles that we face, victories or defeats, it's not going to be long until we're fighting another battle. And I'm sad to say it's going to be that way until the Lord returns. We're going to fight a battle each and every day until the Lord comes back. Or he takes us home to him, one or the other. That battle is going to wear on our hearts. It's going to wear on our minds. It's going to cause a toll. It's going to cause us pain, heartache. But the silver lining is we're not alone. We have teammates. We have our church. We have God's people. And most of all, we have the Lord. We're not alone. You know, David, as great of a warrior as he was, and maybe they knew they had to fight all four of these giants. Maybe those battles were lined up. We had to fight here, here, and here. I don't think it's a coincidence David was fighting the first giant. I think David wanted to be there. David wanted to fight that giant, then he wanted to go for the second one, then the third one, then the fourth one. But I think David needed that reminder that he had help. That he couldn't do it alone, even though he wanted to, even though he thought he could. David needed Abishai to save his life. And then David needed those three others to slay the other three giants. We can't do it alone. One thing I just want to get across, and hopefully we take away from it, myself included. When we get discouraged in the battles of life, never think we're alone. Reach out to someone. Reach out to a sister church. Reach out to your pastor. We're not alone in this fight. And of course, the Lord said he would never leave us or forsake us. There's always going to be yet another battle. But there's always going to be a yet another teammate as well. There's always going to be help. Brother, if you'll come and lead us in a song.